Chapter 20, Last Days of a Great Pioneer. At the Srinagar bus terminal, the scene was one of utter confusion. People were jostling one another to get to the ticket seller, but the seats had all been reserved. Impassioned pleas were made for extra space, standing room, or even a place on the roof. They must get away from Kashmir. This most beautiful place of holiday resorts had become a battleground. Terror and tragedy overshadowed the majestic mountains and the fabled lakes. In August 1947, two new dominions, India and Pakistan, had been carved out of the old Indian Empire. As the transfer of power took place, the pent-up emotions of both sides suddenly erupted with a violence that horrified the infant governments. Chaos resulted as postal and telegraph clerks, railway workers, police, doctors, nurses, and storekeepers left their responsibilities. Killing and arson began. As rumors and reports of incidents passed from community to community, the flames of retaliation burst forth in even greater fury. Death and destruction roared uncontrolled, while the greatest mass migration in human history took place. Dame Edith Brown was in Kashmir on holiday, but now it was imperative that she get back. Ludhiana had become a crossroads for the suffering masses as they trudged along the road to promised nationhood. Here, the impact of opposing forces, open hatred, and malevolent communalism was seen in the mounting number of casualties treated at the hospitals. Dr. Brown stood at the bus terminal, surrounded by her baggage, 14 pieces in all. She surveyed the young Indian woman who stood beside her. "You had better go and change from your sari to your riding clothes. Also, be sure to wear your big floppy hat," she ordered. The young lady was somewhat taken aback by the order. She knew that Dr. Brown did not quite approve of the riding costume, and she certainly abhorred the sight of a woman in trousers. Nevertheless, the girl hurriedly made the change and presented herself before the doctor. "Now get out your biggest earrings and bracelets and put them on," was the next order. The girl was still mystified, but she knew how to obey orders. The final instruction was given just before boarding the bus: get into the back seat and appear as inconspicuous as possible. Before long, the bus was stopped at a checkpoint on the road to Rawalpindi, now the new nation of Pakistan, so each passenger had to be questioned. Anyone known or declared to be a Hindu was in mortal danger. Now the young woman understood Dr. Brown's peculiar instructions regarding her dress and actions. Though she was a Christian, she had the evident aristocratic features and bearing of the high caste from which she had been converted some years previously. Now, for her very life's sake, these had to be concealed by the 10-gallon hat and rough riding clothes. However, a Muslim gentleman sitting near her told the soldier she was his wife's cousin, and so she was passed by. Rawalpindi Station was a welcome but unforgettable sight. Great crowds of people were everywhere, and there appeared to be a complete lack of organization. No one knew when the trains would arrive or depart, and it seemed that a large number of trains would be needed to cope with all the people waiting. While Dr. Brown walked down the platform to count her baggage, Lakshmi Narayan Rao, the lecturer in biology at the college, who was the accompanying Indian lady, was being confronted by an aggressive Pakistani soldier. "Who are you? Where are you coming from, and where are you going?" "I am a Christian and a staff member at the Christian Medical College, Ludhiana. That is where I am going from my holiday in Srinagar," was her reply. The soldier was not so easily satisfied. "If you are a Christian, you must prove it, for you look very much like a Brahmin. You will recite for me the Lord's Prayer." This was surprising for one who was obviously a Muslim to be versed in the Lord's Prayer. Lakshmi was about to begin when an imperious voice broke in. "You will leave that young lady alone. She is a Christian and in my charge. You will leave here immediately." Unseen, Dr. Brown had returned and had quickly sized up the situation. She waved her stick at the soldier and moved in to take command of the situation. The train arrived, and the great mass of humanity tried to climb aboard. The soldiers and the small railway staff had little control of the situation. Compartments were jammed. People stood on the steps and held onto the door handles. The roof was filled with squatting people. Sheer desperation drove the people to fasten onto anything that appeared likely to bear their weight. Dr. Brown and her party managed to get accommodations because six Indian Army officers in the next compartment looked after them. Slowly the train made its way, stopping at every station and sometimes in between. At each station, the compartment would be checked, and Miss Brown always was in command to answer any questions and hurry the examiners on to the next compartment. Usually a cursory glance was turned in the direction of Lakshmi with the remark, "An Anglo-Indian." In this particular clothing, she did indeed look like an Anglo-Indian traveler. 18 hours from Rawalpindi to Lahore, a normal journey of 4 hours. At Lahore, the indescribable scene of human suffering was even worse than at Rawalpindi. For 2.5 hours, the train stood in the station while bickering and commotion could be heard the full length of the train as refugees fought to get a toehold, and others sought to defend the area they already occupied. The customary charwala, the tea vendor, was missing, and the refreshment rooms were not in operation, so food was a problem. However, the foresight of Dame Edith was evident as she unpacked a box of apples she had bought in Kashmir. The travelers feasted on apples and water for the rest of the journey. At Lahore, the doctor requested Lakshmi to change back into a sari. Soon they would be at the Indian border, and there would be no further need to conceal her natural appearance. From Lahore to Ludhiana, usually a 2-hour journey, the refugee train took 8 hours, and each passing mile was marked with new evidence of the abandonment of civil responsibility and authority. At the stations, old people sat weeping because they had been deserted by their families. Dead bodies could be seen at many places along the way. 4 adults and 1 baby were killed by falling off the train roof, but little attention was paid to such incidents. The journey from Srinagar had been long and trying, and it seemed impossible to sleep or rest, that is, with the exception of Dame Edith. In the midst of the commotion, she stretched out on top of 2 trunks and slept soundly. Surrounded by turmoil and danger, she possessed an inner peace which appeared like a haven of refuge in a seething ocean of ferment. As the train approached Ludhiana, the doctor realized she was watching history in the making, a whole order of life being changed. The roads were packed with humanity on the move. Trucks, army lorries, camels, tangas, bullock carts, wheels creaking, moving slowly on to a new life. And everywhere, people, old and young, pushing, jostling, reaching forward to a promise they could not always fully understand. Ludhiana seemed like a town of the dead. The majority of the 90,000 Muslims had fled toward Pakistan. Streets and houses stood empty, showing evidence of hasty flight. Cooking utensils stood by fireplaces. Open boxes with clothing strewn around showed that people were traveling light. Pictures and other personal items could still be seen in many homes. As the tanga swung into the college grounds, it was stopped by an army officer. "Who are you? Who are you out in the streets at this time?" he demanded. "I am Edith Brown, the founder of this college. These are staff members returning with me from holiday in Kashmir, and we have just arrived from the railway station. Now can you explain why are you here and why you are stopping us from entering?" queried the doctor. Apologetically, the officer explained that Ludhiana was under curfew, and no one was allowed to travel the streets at this time without special permission. The tenseness of the situation was further emphasized when they saw soldiers on guard at several points and, looking up, noticed Bren gun nests on the roofs of the college. Dr. Edith Brown had returned home to her college on September 20, 1947, at the age of 83, to find the city and the hospital completely changed. When she had left for Kashmir, the city had been predominantly Muslim in population and character. The hospital was for women and children and was strictly purdah. Now the Muslims had fled, and their place was being taken by Hindu and Sikh refugees from Pakistan. The hospital was on 24-hour emergency shift caring for casualties, and many of these patients were men. On September 22nd, a Muslim refugee train was attacked just outside Ludhiana, and it became a grim scene of unrestrained slaughter. From that onslaught, 84 critically wounded patients were admitted to the hospital, and 150 serious but ambulatory cases were given treatment and returned by army lorries to Lahore. With all this activity, Dr. Brown found that her help was very much needed in surgery. Only 5 senior doctors and 5 assistant doctors were available. Of these, Dr. Pollock was heading the Punjab Christian Relief Committee and was required to be at a number of places supervising the relief work and helping to organize medical work in the refugee camps. Other doctors had to be detailed along with assistant staff to provide medical coverage for the refugee camp where nearly 100,000 Muslims were awaiting transportation to Lahore. An added complication was the outbreak of cholera among the refugees, necessitating the organization of 9 different parties to carry out the immunization program. Under Dr. Rose Rist, the work was done, and the incidence of cholera was considerably reduced in spite of the scarcity of vaccine. The aftermath of the partition disturbances, the uncertainty of the policies of the new government, and anxiety about the future tended to make the administration of the institution difficult for Dr. Pollock. These problems were compounded for her by the fact that Dr. Brown still desired to advise on the course of the college, and at times her wishes ran counter to those of Dr. Pollock. The sum total of the burdens were too great to bear, and in 1948, on the day following Easter, Dr. Pollock failed to appear at her customary place for morning prayers. On investigation, it was found that she had died during the night. Ludhiana seemed to have hit rock bottom. The governing body earnestly sought divine guidance to find the one who would have the physical and spiritual strength to pick up the great burden and face the even greater challenges which lay ahead. That leader was found within their own ranks. Dr. Eileen R. B. Snow, who was then in charge of St. Catherine's Hospital, Amritsar. She had been a fellow student of Eileen Pollock at the London School of Medicine, and they had become firm friends. She had been a member of the governing body for a number of years and was acquainted with the problems and administrative difficulties confronting the college. The Church of England's Zenana Missionary Society was requested to second her services to the Christian Medical College, and they agreed. Dr. Snow accepted the principalship with the dedicated resolve that she was going to raise the college out of its difficulties and lead it to its higher affiliation as a lasting memorial to her beloved colleague, Eileen Pollock. Meantime, Dame Edith had moved from Ludhiana to take up residence in Srinagar, Kashmir, on a houseboat with the poetic name of Water Music. She was not intending to retire, but to launch out into new ventures at 84 years of age. This was the woman for whom life could hold no boredom. There were always new fields to be conquered. Dr. Brown received from London appointment as the local representative of the British and Foreign Bible Society. Then, in cooperation with the Evangelical Library in London, she opened a reading room in Srinagar, where men could browse, receive information, and hear the message of God's love for all men in Jesus Christ. But this limited outreach did not fully satisfy her. There must be other ways she could reach out to larger numbers. She made an alliance with Gospel Recordings, Inc. of the United States. She prepared talks in Kashmiri, which were taped, made into records, and distributed to villages where larger numbers might hear and believe. She also did scripture teaching in mission schools so that she might share this most precious of all gifts with still another generation. Even at 90 years of age, she had an insatiable hunger for knowledge. A visitor was asked to procure books for her on gardening so that she might cultivate to better advantage the flower and vegetable garden she had planted on the plot of ground where her houseboat was moored. She had not been home to England since 1938, but she maintained an avid interest in the happenings there, asking questions about social conditions and living standards. She had a deep concern about the youth of England and their response to the challenge of serving Christ overseas. On December 6, 1956, in the Rainawari Hospital, Srinagar, at 92 years of age, Edith Brown heard the call to cease from her labors. That very morning she had prayed, "Lord, do with me what you will. Only use me in the service of others." She had given her all and held nothing in reserve. She labored in virgin fields and sought to labor on. Only her Lord could say the word, "Cease." She now rests from her labors, and her works do follow her.